You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Welcome on back into Dana and Parks on this Friday, June 26th, about 24 hours before Algeria versus Austria, tomorrow at 9 p.m. And Algeria is the Rock Chalk Algeria. At 5:30 tonight, they are planning a huge send-off in Lawrence at the Leeds Center. They're going to somehow ask everybody to gather outside of the Leeds Center, and they're going to create one gigantic human Algerian flag before all of the fans march to the team's hotel.
And it's not just people. They want their reindeer too.
Yeah, they asked to bring caribou, which apparently was misspelled.
Well, actually, it could have been the carcaboo.
The carcaboo.
Oh, jeez. Now we have another one.
Which is traditional metallic castanet-like percussion instrument. That's probably what they were talking
about. So if you have a caribou laying around, I don't know why you would, or a
carcaboo.
Gather it up and head to the Leeds Center in Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the story on Channel 9. I swear to you, it said, bring your caribou. And I went,
I'm getting to the bottom of this.
Like the coffee or the reindeer? All right. Welcome on in, everybody. This is a super important segment, and we're so glad to have you on board with us for this. I was scrolling the socials about week and a half ago, and I came across a little buddy named Jake, who is wise beyond his years at age 13, and he did a video. And in the video, he is essentially asking Kansas City for help, and I was so struck by his ask and his bravery in asking that I wanted to share his story with you today. His family is in studio. We're going to let you take a listen, and then we'll get to Jake.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jake Hanna. I'm 13 years old. I was born in Overland Park, Kansas, and I'm going to be going into eighth grade this year. Some things I love doing are hanging out with friends, because I have some really nice friends, and also playing soccer, and I have a really big passion for playing it. I want to thank you for taking time of your day just to read over my story and be aware of what's happening. I also hope that you consider to be a living kidney donor, because for me and my family, that would just be life-changing. If you have a few seconds in your day, just share this with some friends and family so then the word can get out to them and they're all just aware.
Such a good job, buddy.
Also, here's my TikTok username, where I read one verse from the Bible every single day for a whole year. Well, that's it for me. Have a great day.
And I loved that video so much. I reached out and I said, would you please come on our program and help explain what's going on and how Kansas City can help? And I know that everybody is going to do what they can. Please welcome in 13-year-old Jake Hanna, mom Shelley, dad Michael, to the Dana and Parks program. Thank you for being here, buddy.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor.
You're so welcome. You're so wise at age 13. I want to read a little bit from your mom's post, and then we're going to get to mom and dad. Shelley, you wrote, this is a very difficult ask for us, but we're trying to do what's best for our son. Many of you know that our 13-year-old Jake was born with chronic kidney disease. His disease has progressed, causing his body to slowly shut down. Treatment options are limited to dialysis or a kidney transplant. Our number one priority is to avoid dialysis by preemptive transplant. His kidney function is currently at 15%. Dialysis will need to be started around 10%. Currently, Jake takes 25 pills and 2 injections every single day to preserve what little kidney function he has left. And we're going to bring in mom Shelley and dad Michael here. Give me a little bit about the background of what is going on with your son. It was around age 3 you found out there was something wrong with his kidney?
Yes, at age 3, he ended up getting really sick one weekend with a stomach bug and decided to finally take him in. And we went to the emergency room because it was over the weekend.
Yeah.
They tested his blood and they were like, what's wrong with his kidneys? And I said, nothing. And they were like, actually, there's something very wrong with them. So that's how we initially found out. And they said it will take about maybe until puberty is when he would need his transplant. And that's the time that we're at now.
We're about there. And Michael, so at age 3, you think everything is fine. You have no history in your family of chronic kidney disease. This is just an anomaly, something that happened.
It is, yeah. It caught us completely off by surprise. No family history. We had a few other boys and they were healthy. And So it was one of those really kind of nightmare situations when in the hospital where every test they ran, it got worse. Mm. Every day they ran more tests, the news got worse and worse until finally they told us that, you know, he has kidney disease and it's progressed pretty severely. And this was going to be the path that we were walking.
Jake, you're an active kid. You like soccer. You guys went to one of the soccer matches this week. How was that?
Yeah, it was amazing. Great experience. The fans, it was just
so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so cool. So tell me what is a little bit about your day-to-day life, Jake? You said you enjoy hanging out with friends. I'm sure you enjoy sports like mm-hmm. Kids your age, but you are taking 25 pills and 2 injections a day. And that is a lot for anybody, let alone someone at age 13. What has that been like?
Just crazy.
Yeah.
Have to wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
Have to take medicine.
Yeah, buddy. I know. Mm. We're going to try to get you some help. I promise. I'm such a huge believer in organ donation. And if you are listening and you are looking for a sign, this is your sign. This is your sign that you can do something. Michael, can you explain a little bit about the difference between a living organ donor and why? What is the difference between that type of match and a deceased donor match?
Yeah. So deceased donors are transplanted every day. And those are good options for a lot of people. They can last many, many years. And there's a lot of good stories out there where there's people 15, 20 years and more that are living off a deceased donor. However, the data seems to show that living donors, for whatever reason, tend to be the better option. And so if that is an option, that's the route that we would like to go. And so, that's what we're trying to do for Jake. Is he's on the list right now to be a deceased donor. And so we're pursuing that as an option.
Sure,
should that come up? If that's the option that presents itself, we'll do that. But our hope is to get a living kidney donor.
Shelley, are you guys a match, or to what extent are you guys a match for Jake?
So both Michael and I were considered to be matches, and we could still potentially be his donor. Didn't know that his blood could actually change over time, and that is what has happened. He's developed some antibodies towards us, which means his body is already sort of fighting off what we would be giving him.
Yeah.
And there's medications that they can use to suppress it, but it would be medications he would have to be on for life. And we're just trying to eliminate that if possible. So our bottom line is, if we can't find a donor by dialysis time, that myself or Michael will be his donor.
So you wrote, we have decided to explore all options to find the best match we can. Jake is active on the deceased donor list and will remain on it as we pursue other living donor options. But like any parent, you are actively exploring all options to find the best option. Because Jake, we don't want just an option for you. We want the best option. And so you are looking for living donors to get tested. What does that process look like, Michael?
So it's relatively simple. It starts with making a phone call to KU Med.
Yeah.
And they take a little bit of history. That from there, they'll do a little bit of screening just on the health. And there's actually some pretty strict criteria to be able to donate. And so people can self, I guess.
Yeah. I don't want to say self-diagnose, but you'll look at the list and know, let me give you an example. If you are a cancer survivor, or if you have had damage to your kidneys, or there's probably a list like that that would disqualify some people.
There absolutely is. And so from there, a lot of people can go through and say, unfortunately, this isn't something I can do. But if you go through that basic criteria and you pass that, then sure, you can make the call. It starts with a little bit of background information. They take some blood pressures, they can do a blood draw, and from there, start to determine how good of a match somebody may be.
So they write, we are looking for a healthy donor between the ages of 18 and 51 with A or O plus or minus, A or O plus or minus blood type. And you give the phone number, and we are going to give that out, but I'm really wanting to give the website out because you guys have a website, you have a Facebook page. You write, as parents, we will do anything to help our child. And when we get back, I want to ask you, whose idea was it to do the video? And all of the options you have explored to try to find the best match for Jake. And even if you look into this, you guys. And it turns out you can't help Jake. I want to remind you, there is so many people out there that need an organ. My uncle is one of them right now. And all you have to do, go to the Kansas organ donation website, go to the Missouri organ donation website, you sign up there. I did this years ago, and then tell someone in your family. And it's really as simple as that. You can't take it with you. Please, please, if you are looking for a sign to help, this is it. Let's get it done together. 913-586-7798. You can text your questions into that number to Sam. 913-586-7798. And we are back with much more with our guest, Jake Hanna, 13 years old, with mom and dad here looking for a kidney. And we're hoping you can help. More on Dana and Parks after this. I love this. One of our listeners writes, my husband donated one of his kidneys to his brother approximately 46 years ago when it was not very common. And the surgery required you to remove the kidney back then was much more invasive than it is now. Both my husband and his brother are now in their 60s. They are both going strong. She writes, the gift of life is one of the most unselfish things you can do as a human being. Someone else asks, is there an age limit for a donor? I'm going to ask you that. That's a very specific age parameter, 18 to 51. I'm 52. Why can't I donate?
I'm not saying that you couldn't donate. Mm-hmm. They kind of just give us that as a guideline.
Yeah.
If you're of, you know, immaculate health and you were older than that, there's a chance that they would say that you are a great donor. We're just trying to narrow it down just to kind of help with that initial search.
And either A or O blood type, either plus or minus, A or O.
Yes.
Jake, who had the idea of doing the video, buddy? Was that your idea?
That was actually my dad's idea.
Yeah.
He wanted that idea so then people could just see my face and know who I am.
Yeah.
So then like everyone would just know who I am, recognize me.
Yeah.
So they know who they're donating to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can be a living donor. Although I would remind you, we would still like you to sign up for the donor registry because I think that that is such an important thing. How have your friends been and your school and the whole community since the video got out there? They've got to be so proud of you, buddy.
Yeah, some friends have seen.
Yeah.
They're amazing friends.
Yeah. Just, you're lucky.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You're lucky.
Very lucky to have friends that just accept me.
Yeah. How did you get such a brave, wise young man? I'm telling you guys, Michael...
Yeah, he's had to grow up quick. You know, he doesn't know it any different. So that might be a bit of a blessing. But he's out of my four kids, he's the one that can handle it. You know, he's extremely mature, and you know, he's done a great job of being responsible for medications at the right time
all
of the
that
day
stuff.
And
not
missing. Yeah, so it's forced him to unfortunately grow up a little quicker than most.
And you guys have a busy household. 15-year-old, Jake is 13, you have a 9, you have a 7. Anything else I guess you just want people to know about the entire process? I think people would be surprised how, I don't want to say it's an easy process, but how easy it can be to change a life, whether that if you're swabbing for Be the Match for bone marrow, or if you decide to be a living donor, or if you sign the back of your driver's license and tell a family member, it really can mean the world to a family like Jake's.
Yeah, I think you said it very well. Maybe a lot of people don't realize, even as simple as putting donor on your driver's license, that I've talked to several people that think they're a donor and they flip their license over and they're not. So something as simple as checking that.
Yep.
And next time you're at the DMV, if that's something you choose to do, making sure that you're a donor. And fortunately with the situation here, we're given two kidneys and can live a perfectly healthy life with one. And like you said, the gift of life is something very rare to be able to give, and people have the opportunity in looking into kidney donation.
Well, Jake, I know that you guys are going to find a match, and we hope that it is the absolute best match, and I think you're brave and amazing, and we want to thank you for coming on the program today. Anything else you want to say, buddy, to everybody listening out there?
I don't know. I think that's good for me.
Yeah.
I'm just very grateful to be on the show and very honored.
You're such a lovely young man. I'm so proud of you. Thank you for being here, buddy. We're going to help you if we can, I tell you that. Please go to DonateLifeKansas.com. It's DonateLifeKS.com. If you're listening and maybe you're not a match for Jake, you could be a match for somebody else. It's DonateLifeKS.com. And then let me pull up Life Missouri because they're always just like slightly different. I'll get you the Missouri one here in a minute. It's donatelifemissouri.org. And then the phone number for KU, if you would like to see if you are a match for Jake, is 913-588-3961. 913-588-3961. Or just reach out to our friends at the University of Kansas Health System. You are Team Jake on Facebook, and I just pinned that to the top of my page as well. Thank you guys so much. Anything else you'd like to say, Michael?
No, just thank you so much for having us and getting the word out on something so important to a lot of people. This touches a lot of people and at one point or another in life. So appreciate you getting the message out specifically with Jake and having us on. Really, really appreciate it. And thank you.
Be well, you guys, and you keep us posted, okay? You promise me, buddy?
You sure will.
You go enjoy some soccer, okay?
Okay.
913-586-7798. We're back with much more after this. You're listening to Dana and Parks. Couple of stories to pass along, not looking to make these topics per se. We have a Missouri deputy who stopped a semi, and what that deputy found is the reason why I always scream, do not ever, ever, ever drive behind a semi. If you are in the car with me, you know this. We come up on a semi, and I do believe semi drivers are among the safest out there. I truly do. But I don't want to be anywhere around them. I don't trust the other drivers around the semi, half of whom have their heads in their cell phones. And if there is some sort of heavy load on the back of those rigs, I refuse to trust that that load is secured properly. I just don't. I think everyone wants to do the right thing. But I think, look, every once in a while we get in a hurry and maybe this screw over here is not lined up with that bolt over there. And now all of a sudden I'm squished like a bug on the highway.
The ones that always get me are when it's the entire trailer full of the clay piping.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's just the,
or rebar.
You know, 30-foot long clay pipes that you can see down while you're driving behind it. I start seeing, you know, scenes from Final Destination in my mind,
so,
and I'm the one getting impaled.
If you roll your eyes and you think I'm crazy, I will just read you this next story. There is a semi-trailer in Missouri that is now out of service because it was attached to the load behind it with a bungee cord and rope. This is from the Platte County, Missouri Sheriff's Office. The Platte County, Missouri Sheriff's Department says they removed a semi-trailer from the road for a, quote, creative but incredibly unsafe attempt to fix the suspension. It happened about a week ago. A commercial vehicle enforcement unit deputy stopped a 2013 Peterbilt truck tractor pulling a 2023 intermodal chassis driving through Platte County, Missouri.
Chassis.
Whatever. During the inspection, the deputy discovered that the trailer's suspension was not connected. I'm going to say that again. The trailer's suspension was not connected.
One of the control arms on one of the sets of wheels. There was no bolt.
No.
Holding it together.
There was no bolt. In fact, in place of the bolt, the deputy found that the suspension system was being held together by a piece of rope, quote, as well as bungee cords, plural.
Oh, we got a MacGyver on our hands.
The deputy cited the truck driver and placed the trailer out of service until it could be repaired or towed from the scene. My God. They included a photo of what was used to keep these pieces of equipment together, and it's exactly as you are picturing it in your mind. It really, it's a bungee cord.
Now, any Midwest guy, when he puts something in his truck bed and
straps
it down.
What's wrong with a bungee cord?
You know, he grabs it, he shakes a little bit, and he goes, that's going nowhere.
Uh-huh.
You think that this truck driver, after he did his inspection and thought to himself, well, I'm missing that bolt, that's bad. Let me go ahead and put some bungee on there. He shook it back and forth and went, that ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, except until it does, and I'm driving behind you. I just don't. If my own mother was driving a large truck hauling things in front of me, I would not ride behind her. It's just not something I'm going to do.
We do have a lot of stories of lost loads here in the Kansas City metro.
Oh, just drive down the highway. You'll see the couch and the furniture and then all this stuff. One of my favorite law enforcement stories today is out of Ohio. a scammer claiming to be with a sheriff's department tried to con a real Ohio police captain out of $2,400. The fraudster called. You know, they do these robocalls.
Yeah.
And one of the calls happens to go to someone who happens to be a real-life police captain.
They make the fake phone number. Yep. They call 10,000 or 10 million different phone numbers trying to scam.
Captain Jacob Morris of the Lorain Police Department received the call from the fraudster, identifying himself, wait for it, as, quote, Captain Michael from a nearby sheriff's department. The caller threatened that a warrant was about to be issued because Captain missed jury duty unless the captain paid him $2,400, which the scammer claimed would be returned to him later. It's risk-free.
Yeah, that's how that works.
Once Captain Morris revealed he was actually a police officer, who, by the way, recorded the entire call, the scammer quickly hung up the phone.
Now, did he identify himself as a police captain, or does he, hey, this is, you know, so-and-so?
No, the first call came in, and the officer said, my name is Captain Michael.
Oh, so he did say captain.
Yes, I am Captain Michael. And the call went to an actual captain, Captain Morris.
Oh, my.
And he let it go on just long enough. Oh, Captain Michael, tell me more about the $2,400 you need. And then there is this story ahead of the July 4th holiday. And it does come with some audio, Sam, if you could pull that up for us. If you've ever wondered what 700 pounds of fireworks sounds like when it explodes and takes out several homes on a block.
It was a big-ass boom.
We're about to play that for you. Someone thought it would be a good idea to have 700 pounds of fireworks delivered to their home. They then hauled all of the fireworks inside the home.
It was a big-ass boom.
And then they thought, I really feel like a cigarette. So they lit a cigarette. And you can probably fill in the blanks what happened next.
Just over a week from the 4th of July. A pyrotechnic display shakes a community to its foundation.
It was like a war zone at first.
I'm over here.
Windows rattled. A couple pictures came off the wall inside.
Just before 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, a house in Whidbey Island's Lagoon Point neighborhood near Greenbank blew up, the ensuing fire destroying a neighboring home and damaging a third. Tanya Henderson's home is damaged but still standing.
Crazy. Very insane. Very hot, very big, and very scary.
It appears to have been a piece of the concrete siding that came over.
Investigators discovered debris hundreds of feet away, the explosions continuing for hours.
They were exploding over and over and over. Yeah, it was bad.
Three first responders were hurt, the most serious injury, a firefighter hooking up a hose to a hydrant just 20 feet from the initial explosion. He may lose a finger.
If the guys had been here, you know, or had been standing in a spot just a second later or a second earlier, if the timing just hadn't been right, we would probably have all three of them down at Harborview right now.
Investigators tell us a cigarette is believed to have ignited some 700 pounds of fireworks stored inside the house. Exactly why they were there remains a mystery.
I'm going to stop right there. That's my favorite line in the entire story. 700 pounds of illegal fireworks, and the neighbors saw this guy hauling them into the house.
Right.
And then the reporter goes, why the fireworks were in the home remains a mystery.
Because he put them there.
He put them there. Here's my question.
Pretty obvious.
One of the neighbors says in that story, like, we knew it was the fireworks because we've seen them being hauled on pallets into the house the last week or so.
Right.
Would you call somebody if you saw something like that? I'm being serious. It's 4th of July. Like, if someone pulled up with a pickup truck and they were unloading sparklers and some, like, clearly, like, the big packages that you can buy on the stands that pop up off the side of the highway. I don't think anyone's going to think anything about that. These were pallets and pallets of, again, 700 pounds of fireworks.
It probably just looked like a big order of fireworks, so I can't imagine that there were multiple pallets for 700 pounds of fireworks. If I saw people loading in a bunch of fireworks, I would probably take a page out of the Mind My Own Business book and just
You wouldn't call the ATF. Not that I know how to call the ATF. You wouldn't be like, look, this looks like a little something is going on that's over the top next door.
I wouldn't want my neighbors calling the ATF because I put a pallet in my garage. So
full
I'm not going to call. Well,
okay. Well, let me tell you what they don't have anymore in Seattle.
A garage?
They don't have a garage. Yeah. They don't have pallets. One of the sites, because two or three homes were destroyed, all you see is rubble, and there is still one set of concrete steps, and then the other house is, I see one window left and something on a side deck. The entirety of the rest of that house, and it's a big house, is gone. I'm not victim blaming. I'm not saying they should have called. I'm just saying.
It was a big-ass boom.
Yeah. If it looks like
a duck,
and it smells like a duck, why would you light a cigarette?
Now, some of the stories that we've seen here from the Metro regarding, I think it was an Odessa man who blew up his apartment, with regard to, you know, the raw materials behind making fireworks.
Oh, every year we have someone go rogue thinking they can manufacture their own fireworks.
If I'm sitting on my side porch and I see a pallet come off a truck that says Tannerite and another one that says gunpowder and another one that, you know, says M80 shells, that might prompt a phone call. Maybe not to the ATF, maybe to the non-emergency line, like, hey, don't know what's going on, but... No, I mean...
You were saying when you used to work at your other job, Sam, that there would be people that would come in, order a pack of cigarettes, light up the smokes, and then put gasoline in their car.
Oh, yeah. So they'd come in, they'd prepay for the pump, they'd buy a pack of cigarettes, and smoking next to a gas pump is one thing because the fumes could ignite, right? That's a problem in and of itself. What these brainiacs would do, and this happened probably every single shift... was they would light the cigarette on the way out to pumping the gas and then handle the nozzle that's, you know, dripping
with gasoline.
Something highly flammable with the lit cigarette hanging out of their mouth and then sit there and,
Would you guys have to go out and say you can't have a lit cigarette at the pump?
No.
No. Just you do you, buddy.
You know, duck away from the front of the store if it looks like it's about to go boom.
We leave you with a positive gas station story. Father this week delivered his own son at a Quick Trip on Father's Day.
Nice.
Most fathers spend Father's Day opening a card, firing up the grill. But for one San Antonio dad, the day started with a 911 call and a baby arriving in the front seat of a car. A moment he says he never saw coming. It was around 2 a.m. on Father's Day. Louis Serta wasn't thinking about gifts. He was trying to get his wife to the hospital. Minutes into the drive, his wife Maria told him, this baby's coming. He says, pretty much 5 or 6 minutes driving on the way to the hospital. We're driving, and I'm trying to drive like a little faster. And the wife says, I was in his ear. And then I'm like screaming, this baby is coming. He says, we're heading down Interstate 37, and the situation changed so quickly. Maria felt the baby crowning. And I know this is my second baby, she says. I know what's coming, and I know that feeling. So Louis pulled into a Quick Trip gas station on Hot Wells Boulevard and called 911. He says, I had to reach down to make sure, and there he was. And I was like, okay, I told 911, we're not going to make it. We pulled over into the gas station. By the time he opened the passenger door, nature did what nature is going to do, and the baby was already coming. He says, as soon as he got out, by the time he opened the passenger side, that baby shot out. I mean, I caught him. The umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck. We undid it. Baby took his first breath and started crying. The 911 dispatcher sort of tried to talk him through the entire thing, but it was over before first responders even arrived, and firefighters let him have the scissors to cut the umbilical cord. They named him Louis III after Dad, and a Father's Day story no one in that family will ever forget.
What a cutie.
Stop it.
Q-T.
Stop. Get out.
Okay.
Get out.
I'll see you later.
913-586-7798. We're back with much more on Dana and Parks straight ahead. I'm telling you, sometimes Sam and I come across something, but we don't know if it's real or a joke or like clickbait. You really do have to be careful. Just as consumers of information, we all need to do a better job of making sure that what we're sharing and what we're reading and what we're looking at is real. Like we all have that obligation. I really truly believe that. And I sent Sam a story because I saw it on Facebook that the rogue found alligator, Longview Lou, out at Longview Lake, has found a new home. And we reported this. We actually broke the news yesterday with County Executive Phil Lavota as he found out that trappers had rounded up this rogue alligator yesterday afternoon.
Like Longview Lou.
Literally announced it on the air and said, and don't call him little fella. He has a name. It's Longview Lou. So because we were talking about that yesterday and kind of laughing about it and like, how the hell does an alligator get out in the middle of Longview Lake?
Right.
You know, Facebook starts shoving me content about alligators. And one of the things they shoved me was a site called Casey Pet Project Lost and Found. And I said to Sam, let's look into this. I don't know if this is real, but it claims that Casey Pet Project ended up with Longview Lou. We had joked with the county executive yesterday. What does one do with a found rogue alligator? What, you take it to Casey Pet Project?
Yeah.
The answer is apparently yes.
I have gotten confirmation. I just spoke with Casey Pet Project. They said they are in the possession of one Longview Lou, and they are putting the word out to get somebody on the line to talk about taking care of sweet Longview Lou and what that looks like. And, you know, what do we do with an alligator here in Kansas City that we found swimming around
it's
in one of
so
our
lakes? It's so funny, you guys. It didn't look like the actual Casey Pet Project website, and so I was like, let's just be sure before we start talking about Longview Lou again, that's actually where he went. And we can't keep an alligator here.
Wait,
they're going to have to find a home in a zoo or,
some
I don't know,
sanctuary somewhere.
Florida. Or you want me to take him down where my parents are? But anyway, if you go to KC Pet Project Lost and Found, you are going to find two things. Okay? Two things. Esther, a large-eared bunny rabbit, approximately 1 year old. If you are missing your rabbit, they have Esther. And then hopefully not in the same cage, but on the same web page, you see Longview Lou. And here's what it says. There's a little photo of him. Meet Longview Lou. Location, office. Species, other. Breed, alligator. Age, 1 year. Gender, unknown. Found, yesterday. Location, found. The 11,600 block of Raytown Road. It says size, large.
Mm-hmm.
Color, green/brown, spayed, neutered, no. Do you know how funny it would be if you were the staff member at KC Pet Project tasked with filling out the identifying features in the lost and found pet section?
The intake form. I mean, any of it.
Really, all they need to say is alligator, Longview Lake.
Yeah.
We have him. Who does he belong to? Why? Why did you let him go? And do you want him back? Because I'm guessing these are not legal to keep. Are they in Missouri? I have no idea.
I think they are legal to keep.
Oh, Sam. If you're missing an alligator, you have to know by now that this has been all over the news.
Well, and I think that the county executive Phil Lavota had some great insight yesterday. It sounds to me like the care for Lou got too much for an alligator owner in the area, and
they
decided we're just going to let him go at Longview Lake.
Yeah, we're going to make this somebody else's problem.
By the way, Missouri State Statute Section 578.023 of the Wildlife Code permits you to own an alligator under 8 feet without a special permit.
Why? Why are
you
we
can
allowing
still
this?
Own an alligator over 8 feet. However, you have to get a
okay,
permit.
So I want to be very clear about this.
No permit necessary for any alligator under 8 feet.
We have decided to outlaw license plate frames on one side of state line with a $2,500 fine starting July 1st. That is not a joke.
Right.
But it's perfectly fine to own an alligator.
It is illegal to own an alligator in Kansas.
Right.
Missouri, good to go. Get your gator on.
Look at kcpetproject.org. Under Lost and Found, if you're missing an alligator.
We'll see if we can catch up with them in the 4 o'clock hour.
Get results on that webpage. We're back after this. You're listening to Dana and Parks.
Get the Dana and Parks podcast, kmbz.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. The Dana and Parks podcasts. Like, subscribe, do that thing.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.